Welcome to the Smuggler's Den.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Brought to you by Game Empire Pasadena, a great friendly atmosphere for playing a wide variety of games and for purchasing all of your gaming needs. Check them out online at GameEmpirePasadena.com. Welcome to the 19th edition of the Smuggler's Den. I'm Tiny Grimes.
And I'm Ben Tully. Be sure to check us out at our various online instances. You can check us out on Facebook, the Smuggler's Den. You can email us at our email address, which is smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com. And sometimes, elusively, you can check out Tiny streaming Star Wars on his Twitch TV account at twitch.tv/tinygrimes.
And you might occasionally see me streaming Soulforge.
Can you not plug Soulforge right now?
If you are interested in playing me on Soulforge, just challenge Tiny Grimes. Shockingly, I would pick Tiny Grimes as my handle.
Yeah, I can't believe you use your real name for all of these things.
Yep, I'm just not shy. I love my given name of Tiny Grimes so much, I just use it as a handle everywhere. So Ben, I hear there was a major event last weekend. I'm struggling to remember what it was.
We had a three-person tournament at JJ's Games in Chatsworth.
Oh, that one. Yeah. How'd that go?
That was awesome. It was really a lot of fun.
It seems like there was a bigger one though.
Hold on. Wasn't Gen Con last week? Did they have a Star Wars event at Gen Con?
I thought they canceled it when we said we couldn't go.
Oh, no. Man. Well, sorry, listeners. If you're still listening after that comment, I apologize for Tiny's bravado on that.
No, we were more sad than anything. Especially,
I was just really—I mean, when things started to come in, like people talking about the event and how many people were there, and just being at the—I just started to get like Thursday morning. I was just so jealous. Like, yeah. It was like super rage jealousy. I was just like, I couldn't concentrate at work. I kept like, you know, refreshing everything. We had updates from one of our SoCal friends there, and he was in the tournament and sending updates through Facebook and through you. And I was just like, I need more information.
Yeah, this is how bad it was for me. Wednesday night, when it dawned on me, wait, the tournament is actually Thursday. I could actually fly out to the tournament, claim to be working late on Thursday, fly home Thursday night after the tournament, and no one would be the wiser.
Except that the tournament ended at 2 a.m.
Yeah, my flight would have been like a midnight flight, and I would have gone, oh, well, yeah, I guess I have to pull out now.
I think you would just have skipped your flight.
Really? You think so?
I mean, you would have suffered terrible consequences in your personal life, but yeah, I think you would have.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Luckily, hopefully I would have just been eliminated in the Swiss and not had to worry about it. But yeah, I think if I had been in the top four, I think it would have taken a team of wild horses to drag me off. So, yeah.
I mean, I'm glad that you didn't lose in the Swiss event at something like this, because I imagine there would have been a big, like a call that went over, like one, the plane was flying back to L.A. The pilot would have to be announcing to like, we're sorry, there's a delusional man who claims to have won some type of meaningless event. We can't seem to get him to sit down in his seat. We're going to have to take an emergency landing in Denver. That's probably what would happen.
Take him into custody.
Yeah, for causing like a panic on a plane.
Yeah, maybe. I actually handle winning and losing with grace and dignity, I would say.
Yes! Oh,
I don't,
excuse me,
I don't
sorry.
Flip chairs. Oh, man. I don't flip chairs like you, Ben.
That was still the highlight of anything that's ever happened at Game Empire, I think.
Yeah, everyone talks about it.
I don't think anybody talks about it.
No, they do. All right, well, let's move on.
Let's stop bantering. This is it. The intro is done. Let's get on with this.
Yeah, let's get on with the show. We already lost our whole audience.
Yeah, right, Ben. Point my fingers at you.
So Gen Con looked like
Gen Con.
Successful. 100 people. 100 people. Let me do the quick computation. They had 8 rounds of Swiss?
I think they would only need 7 rounds of Swiss.
Only 7? Okay.
7 cover 64 to 128.
Oh, okay. So only seven. So it's seven rounds of Swiss.
Yeah. Seven rounds of Swiss. Yeah, that sounds exactly like the right amount to me, Tiny. I think they played five.
Wow. Five when you should play seven. That seems like it's going to be a disaster.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of caveats to this type of calculation.
Give me the caveats.
A pure Swiss based on the number of people you're playing, that type of round determination really only is necessary if your ultimate goal is to have a true, clear winner at the end of your Swiss rounds.
Okay, and we don't really care about that.
And if you're going to go to a cut, you can have less rounds than what is determined to be the optimal number of rounds. The other thing that really plays into it is Swiss really is for when you have win-loss scenarios.
Right.
I think a very good example of this would be for chess, right? Like you have checkmate and you win or the game isn't over, right? Are there ties in chess?
Yes, there are many, many draws. Most games end in draws.
Oh, that's a completely terrible analogy. Cut that part out. So when you have a setup like Star Wars with our point system, where you have wins and losses, and then kind of pseudo wins where you win the tiebreaker but not the whole event, and time draws and real draws and modified wins and anything like that. The points allow you a little bit more leeway there too. So, you know, while seven might be ideal, I feel like seven in an event like this would make it so that there's rarely a problem with who makes the top 16 and who doesn't. It should be very clearly defined after seven rounds.
Right.
When you have as many people that you could do seven rounds, and you could do seven rounds, and you say, we're only going to do five. I think you run into issues a little earlier than you would if you did six or seven. And it mainly comes down to the people who do and don't make the cut at 16.
Right. Yep. And I think it becomes also an issue where you have more people that are making the cut who did not actually excel during the Swiss and were sort of in the middle of the pack and made that jump right at the end, where if you have that one more round after they've made the jump, they get knocked back down, and then the people who were at the top the whole time have that chance to hop back up.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I have in front of me the info. This was posted on the boards, and I promised myself that I would keep track of who actually posted this, but I don't have it in
front
of me.
Way to lie to yourself, Ben.
I know. That seems to be a regular thing for me. And so what this is the breakdown of the points of each person who made the top 16, as well as their strength of schedule of their opponents. And so and just to give you kind of an idea of the spread, the first place seed going into the top 16 had 37 individual points. Yeah. And essentially the people who were at the on the bubble were people who had 28 points. So there's a 9-point swing there. So the entire, you know, the difference between a full win plus something else, right? I mean,
right.
That there's a big difference there. But there's also a big difference between the strength of schedules and of the different people, with a high at 132 and a low of 83.
Wow, that is a big difference.
So that's almost as a 49-point difference.
Wow.
Between people who have points, strength of schedule points. And so I think this is probably it's a weird system keeping track of things like this, but this means something like, so person four, whoever four was, and I already feel bad because this actually is a person. They'll be able to listen to this podcast and be like, hey, that was me. I thought I had a really strong day, and I apologize if this is you individually, but I'm only looking at the numbers, so I'm not picking on people in particular. So person four had 32 points and had a strength of schedule of 84, had the second lowest strength of schedule of the people who made the top 16. And so that's just...
Wait, is this the person that finished fourth or the person who was the fourth?
Who was seated fourth.
Was seated fourth. Wow, the person who was seated fourth had the second lowest strength of schedule?
Second lowest strength of schedule, yeah.
Oh, that's very interesting.
And so that I think that's a it just and I don't know what to say about the scoring system at this point that we haven't covered a whole bunch of times. I don't think anybody, from what I'm aware of, has come up with a better way to score games. I don't think that we have a better alternative than what we have right now, where we play one on one with some type of tiebreaker, one side versus the other side and then flipping. But for sure, I mean, if I was somebody, so there's somebody here who was seeded 12th, had 28 points, and so was right on the bubble of not making it, who had 132 points, and it had the highest strength of schedule.
Wow.
So that means they were playing people who were part of this top level, right? So
right.
Four of their opponents, would have been in the mid-20s for them to be that high. And so
right.
Somebody who had, the fourth seed having only 84, you take 84 and you divide it by five rounds, their average opponent only had 16 points. So yeah, so I think it's just an interesting setup that there can be such a spread of and this I think this might be the reason why you shouldn't play five rounds. And so in a little bit in the episode you'll be able to hear our interview with the national champion winner, Matt Coles.
Spoiler alert.
I didn't know we were keeping it a secret. And he said that he didn't face off against any of his opponents that he played. So, he's only playing four opponents in the top 16, right? So it's not like he's going to have a chance to play. But he said that he didn't play any of those. Oh, my God. He said he didn't play any of those individuals in the Swiss rounds. And I think that's really kind of what makes the difference between a five-cut and a six-cut type event, even a seven-cut event, is that eventually these people who are in the top 16 would have had to play each other, right?
Yep.
Like, if I'm looking at this correctly, going into round six, one and two would have had to have played, three and four would have had to have played, five and six would have had to have played, and that would have, really given four, this person in the fourth seed an opportunity to have their deck do well against a strong opponent who had done really well at that point. But if you only have five rounds in a system that could handle seven, you really are only going to get through that middle of the pack in most occasions, right? Some people are going to have really hard uphill battles, as this person seeded 12th did, where they're playing what appears to be some of the best players in the tournament. And then you'll also have, conversely, people who had a slightly less intense battle going through the pack that allows them to then just kind of come in at 32 points and move on into the finals. And maybe it'll be solved a little bit at Worlds because the prelims are on a different day, so that if they want to, they can do seven rounds. But again, I guess it starts at 3 p.m., right? So I don't actually know what time the event started.
I think it started at 11.
Started at 11.
Yep.
And so,
so they might do less rounds at Worlds.
Well, I don't think that's the case. I think Gen Con was a really good experience for FFG. It sounds like a lot of the issues that they had to do with getting the scores in between the rounds and posting the next rounds. It sounds like there's a lot of downtime at that. After all of the stuff was turned in, so you had a 65-minute round, they started doing the determination of what the next round seedings were going to be, and then that took, it sounds like, a really long period of time before they had the postings up. I don't know what the average time was or how realistic that was, but hopefully they'll have those kinks worked out come Worlds, so the downtime between rounds isn't, half an hour, 45 minutes, but 15 minutes. You get started right away.
Yeah.
If you do it that way, six rounds shouldn't take, well past midnight, especially if you're only doing 65-minute rounds.
Yeah, I don't really understand that, because I was at Gen Con last year and played Game of Thrones, and that was not an issue at all. It was very prompt, so much to the point where if you had a game that took the whole time and you had to go to the bathroom, it was really dicey. You're, running to the bathroom hoping you get back in time.
Yeah, I honestly don't understand. I mean, if I'm correct, I don't know exactly what was happening. There wasn't the same type of descriptive pictures from the Star Wars side of it. But I know the top 16 for the Thrones Melee was determined by hand.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so I think FFG probably realizes this and will hopefully have something in place come Worlds where this is all done automatedly. Like, you come in, you give your results. You know, you could have been done after 50 minutes. You could be done after the full 65. You come in, you give your results. The next seeds are determined, you know, in real time at that point. You print it out. It goes up on the wall. Like, there shouldn't be any more. There shouldn't be, like, a large degree of, like, turnover. Somebody shouldn't be calculating this by hand when you have that number of people. It's just insane to try and think that would be the case.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's really strange.
And so to just go back a very quick second to the types of ties that to the types of scoring that we're seeing, there's one example in the top 16 that's a perfect example of why these tiebreaker rules in the top 16 after the cut really aren't potentially the best rulings to way to go. I know it's a way to conserve time. This is a great example in this event of why you would need to conserve time in this way, because it just keeps going long. And if somebody has a true draw and they have to play a third game, it could be a real problem. But here at Gen Con, the persons seated 7th and 8th had exactly 30 points going from their total wins, as well as 83 points in strength of schedule. And so that means that unless they've matched up against each other at some point, that means that the person who was seeded 7th was determined based on their opponent's strength of schedules. At least that's my understanding of how FFG Swiss events work. And so, unless there's a really heavy overlap in the opponents they played, in which case then they can actually determine that pretty quickly.
Not going to be with that field, though.
Most likely not the case. And so you're in a situation where if they meet up in the final 8 or in the final 4 and they get to a true draw, it means that the person who loses not based on how well they did or the opponents that they beat, but how well their opponents did against other people. And I personally don't think that's a good way. It's happened before in Thrones where people have made the cut because of something like that. It's always a bittersweet taste, and to have something where that's what decides if you win after a draw, that's what decides who wins is probably not the best way to do it.
I've got a question for you. How many points did the 5 seed have?
30 points.
And how many points did the 12 seed have?
28 points.
So there's a 2-point difference there, which is pretty small. And what was the 5 seed strength of schedule?
113.
And then what was the 12 seeds?
132.
So essentially what I'm saying there is, like, for this is just a random example, but in the 5-12 matchup, the 12 played a substantially harder Swiss schedule by a wide margin and had a very slightly less amount of points. Not like even a win less, like 2 draws different. And in a tie, they lose, even though they played the substantially harder Swiss schedule. I think the bottom line is you cannot have in an elimination round a situation where ties are determined that way. There has to be a third game. There just has to be.
I mean, and as we saw at KublaCon, it just doesn't work super well.
Nope, it doesn't work well. But if you're going to go till 2 a.m. anyway and let people have these endless untimed rounds with no encouragement to go faster, then that's what you got to do. Because
it does seem extremely strange to me that here are. I mean, I've seen you play, so I understand what happens here.
Whoa!
But I mean, here you are. You've been playing regimentedly, 65 minutes for a match, 65 minutes for a match, 65 minutes for a match. All of a sudden, they say, "Okay, there's no time limit anymore." And you take 2 hours to play a game. I just don't understand where the mindset on that is. Who enjoys sitting there for 2 hours? I mean, I understand you want to win, right? You're thinking every possibility. You're trying to, you know, achieve the highest possible chance of winning. Yeah. I don't know.
The funny thing is, I do better with a time limit.
Because, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, you don't have the opportunity. You have to go with what you think is the best play, and you don't have a chance to overanalyze it. It's a gut feeling. It's based on your experience. It's not.
Like, your mind can't wander. You can't loathe your missed decisions and what's happened. You can't just sit there and bemoan the fact that they just drew a Han or a Luke. You have to just play the game. And I find myself, I don't know if others slip into this, that when a game is going poorly, if I have a time limit, I'm dialed in the whole time. And win or lose, I'm totally dialed in. If there is not a time limit, I will be more susceptible to sort of spiraling into the self-loathing disgust phase rather than just being totally dialed in and then make a secondary mistake on top of either the mistake I made or the good draw my opponent had. Whereas if I was dialed in, I'd be reacting in a better way. And by not having a time limit, it allows me to let my mind wander into bad places it shouldn't wander.
Well, that's interesting.
Yep. So, yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't think you can put time limits on those rounds. Because that would be bad also, but I really absolutely don't think it can be decided by the seeding unless you're going to do an insane amount of rounds. Like if you're going to do the max amount of rounds you should do, like if you're going to do seven Swiss and really get this big difference in scoring, then you can do that more. But if the difference is like 1 point separating seven places and one guy has double the strength of schedule, and that's the guy with a lower seed, I don't think you can do that. I don't think that works. And I know.
I mean, we'll find out. I mean, FFG is fairly good at responding to things if you give them enough time to when things aren't working out properly.
Yeah. Here's
and
a so question.
And they have, you know, it's August. They have 3 months now until Worlds. I'm sure we'll see another FAQ for most of the major. Intellectual properties. I'm sure we'll see something change about the tournament schedule. They had their first big tournament. 100 people showed up. I really can only imagine that there's going to be more people at Worlds.
I don't think there will be.
I think you're wrong. I mean, how many people were at Worlds last year for Thrones?
A lot.
It was like 80 people, right?
Yeah.
Which was about equivalent to the number of people who were at Gen Con that year, maybe a little less, right? And so that was the year where Worlds was announced last minute. People had to choose between Gen Con and Worlds, and some people had already picked Gen Con because they didn't know Worlds was going to exist at that point in time. I think this year, you know, this is the year. There are more players at Gen Con for the LCGs than at any other time. Mm-hmm. I really think that you're going to have a Worlds event that is going to be well over 128 people.
Wow.
Somewhere in the one, I bet you like Star Wars is going to be in the 150s, if not closer to 200.
Holy cow! I'm guessing it'll be about 90.
I think you're wrong. I hope I'm wrong.
I think there's
a lot of hype about this. I think people have really, you know, it might be, you know, heavily concentrated from the America Midwest of people attending, but I think anybody within driving distance will be going, which is a large number of people. I mean, we're hoping to take somewhere close to like, you know, 40% of our meta to go, right? Yep. Our core meta of like, you know, 12 people, you know, and so we're talking about 5 to 6 of our meta coming along to play. You know, all of the people I mean, 80% of the San Diego meta is going from what I'm aware of. And I don't know if they're going to be playing Star Wars, but they're going to Worlds.
Yeah. They'll be playing Thrones. I do have one quick question for you because this happened. Let's look at the 4 seed. Sorry, not the 4 seed. The 10 seed and the 15 seed, because they actually did have a true tie, and it was two of my friends. It's TGO and Scott, and TGO got to move on because they had a true tie. So I'm curious to see what those numbers look like, because I don't have them in front of me.
You said the 10 and the 15?
Yeah, the 10 and the 15.
So the 10 had 29 points with a strength of schedule of 105.
Okay.
And 15 had 28 points with a strength of schedule of 106.
Yeah, that's really funny. I'd say basically they had the same day, right?
Pretty much.
Almost exactly the same day, and Scott goes home because he had one less point than TGO. I mean, and in a way it's good. Like, they rewarded TGO for having more points, but Yeah, that has to be fixed.
I mean, I think there's a really interesting thing here where I didn't even think about this, but you know, with a tiebreaker win, it's 5-4,
right?
But you can actually do better if you win your first round and then let time expire. Yeah. Because then you have a 6-2. So not only do you get more points, but yep, you've screwed over your opponent. So especially if you're playing somebody who, you know, it's later in the game, like later in the Swiss round, yep, and you want, you know, maybe you have friends there, or you really want to keep this, maybe you have a personal vendetta against them, and you want to keep them out of the 16. Like, you can really screw, you can screw somebody, or you can cut people, like, 2 points right there. Like, if you lose 2 points and it's not a 4, it's a 2, like, right, and you have 26 points, that's the difference between you making the cut and not making the cut.
So you're basically saying, TGO, you're on notice, you're going to do that to TGO?
I didn't say that TGO was the target on this one. I'm just saying that a savvy player,
yeah,
would take
no,
advantage
no,
of that.
No, not a savvy player, a D-bag. That, let's be real here, that you don't do that. I mean, if it happens,
it
that's
happens,
one thing, but you don't stall to do something like that.
It would be pretty cruel.
Not just cruel, that would be a D-bag. So.
And so just to kind of round out our, I guess, at this point, it's this episode is becoming exclusive Gen Con coverage after the fact. It's just some of the stuff that happened from a, it's more of a, and some people might want to turn off this part and maybe skip to the end of the interview, or however you want to do this. This is more of like a plea to FFG. And if somebody from FFG listens to our podcast, I would be actually really amazed. And if they don't, it's also kind of a plea to the community to kind of make your voices heard either on the boards, which I'm sure they actually do check on time to time, or through emails to some of the play organizers. And I'm not saying to be confrontational or anything like that, but just kind of express either disappointment or eagerness to see these types of things in the future. And the first thing is the prize support for something like Gen Con. And so, I don't know, some people might have heard what Matt won as, the first place winner. Essentially what it broke down to was top 16 got a Han Art playmat that says Gen Con 2013 on it, top 16 whatever it says on it, something to commemorate the occasion. The top 4 received a tote bag or over-the-shoulder messenger bag of Han Solo card art. And then Matt, as the winner, won a plaque that said Gen Con winner, North American Championship with the Han Solo art on it. And so I had come in with the understanding this year that Gen Con was only going to be the quote-unquote North American Championships, and that was going to be a slightly more prestigious title than a regional win, but essentially that was what it was going to give you. Matt won a bye to Worlds, just like a regional would. It was kind of like a big event, super regional, if you will. But as prize support goes, I don't know how you feel about it, Tiny, but I feel like if I had gone and shown up and played these big events, the only thing I'm excited about at that point in time is an exclusive mat for the top 16. I mean, are you going to be thrilled about the messenger bag?
I'd probably use it for my cards to take to Game Empire, which is fine.
Just to prove that you have it.
Yeah, probably. I mean, and I think it looks kind of cool.
Slightly practical.
Yeah.
Would you have been more thrilled if it had been, I don't know if we necessarily need 3 different mats for the different tiers of things like that. But would you have been more thrilled if there had been an exclusive card print on demand with a different type of art, or an exclusive Erebush card? I know people have already kind of getting tired of the Erebush cards. They're like, okay, well now it's time to move on. Like, you get it. We got Erebush cards.
Yeah.
You know, can we get Erebush cards with different art?
Should definitely be something for the champion. The champion should have his own mat. Like, a bag's fine, but a mat in this game and in these card games, mats are what are cool. If you have a mat that no one else in the country has, a.k.a. John Bruno, for Thrones, it looks really cool. And I'm sure they want to save that as a world championship title. And it really just up to FFG how they want to treat this event. If they want to just treat it as a super regional, then I think the prizes were totally fine. If they want to treat it as, no, no, this isn't a super regional, this is a major event, this is Gen Con, we had 100 people, we want to treat it like a major event, then yeah, there needs to be an exclusive prize for the champion. The champion should have his own mat. And I really do like that idea of having an alternate art card that says on the bottom, like, Gen Con champion, and you give them a playset, and you give them two copies of it.
Sure. I mean, and so they're starting to do this with X-Wing now, where their alternate art game night kits are pictures from the movie.
Oh, cool.
And so Wedge Antilles normally in X-Wing is just a sketch drawing, not sketch drawing, but like a good drawing of an X-Wing from behind or something like that. Right? Sure. That's cool, right? It says Wedge Antilles on it, like, you know who that is. The new alternate art for the lead kit is Wedge Antilles, a picture of him from, the Battle of Yavin. Like, I mean, that's pretty cool. And so, like, if that was the card, right, imagine Matt got, he wasn't playing any of these cards, but imagine he got Luke Skywalker, and it was a picture of Luke with his lightsaber crossed against Darth Vader, from the movie.
Yep.
Right? And, the card could be exactly the same except for that. Like, I mean, and he was the only one who had it.
Yep.
I mean, I think that would probably go hand in hand. I think that would be kind of, worth it. We all know that in Worlds, for these LCGs, if you don't know this, that if you win, you get to design a card.
Well, right? That's how it's been in the past for others that didn't have a pod system. I don't know how it's going to be for Star Wars.
Well, I mean, assume it's going to be at least one card at Star Wars.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Tiny's got his fingers crossed for a whole pod with his name on it. He's just salivating.
It would be great. It would be really cool to see the champion, whoever it is, design a pod, because then it's not, because the way this game works, they could design the synergistic thing that drops into the game. I think that would be a really cool prize. Might be too much, but it'd be really cool.
It's a lot of work, I imagine, making a pod that works really well. So there's that side of it. I really think FFG, it just needs to be clearer about what the goal of the events are and what the prizes will be up front, right? I mean, I know it takes away some of the surprise element and makes things seem a little bit less kind of spontaneous. Like, oh my God, did you see what so-and-so won? This is amazing. However, at the same time, I feel like, if some people showed up, maybe people came from much further afield than just outside the Gen Con kind of immediate bubble of states, and they got there and they had gone through this whole ordeal, had played from 11 a.m. till 2 a.m., and was ready to receive their prize and was handed a plaque that said Gen Con winner. Like, I could see somebody being disappointed in that.
Yeah. I know for myself, if I had gone to Gen Con, it would have just been to try to win Gen Con.
And right. I mean, at that point, you want to be meeting people and you want that title, and people are going to respect, say, oh, look, Tiny Grimes, he's the Gen Con winner from the first time that, that'll be a thing. You're right, but.
Yeah. To me, the prize is irrelevant. But if you're going to do a prize and you want it to be memorable, it needs to be something cool. Like, I don't think people are ever going to play Gen Con for the prize. The prize is just not that great.
I mean, I do know people play Worlds for that prize to make a card.
Exactly. I mean, getting to design your own card is really, really cool. And people come and say, I came to Worlds just to try to design a card.
I do feel bad for those people.
Why is that?
Because most of the times, those are people who are not even, making it to the cut.
Like, oh, yeah, right.
They're like, oh, I'm here. Wouldn't it be great if I got to make a card? And it's
That's never been my dream. Like, if I ever get to make a card, that's cool. I would really enjoy it. But that will not ever be my goal, is to design a card. Like, that's completely ancillary.
Right. And so then the other thing I wanted to touch on, and people have touched on this, especially on the FFG boards, is the lack of coverage from FFG.
Yeah.
And so everything that we found out pre-game, during the game, and post-game has been from a community-led number of people. TGO has been instrumental in providing deck lists for the top 16. We had updates coming from people who were playing in the tournament or were at Gen Con and were giving updates in that sense. And And yet here we are, like a very fairly large community eager and waiting for these types of information. And the tournament organizers have it, and we still haven't heard anything official from FFG. And you know, I've been around FFG and the LCGs for a while. I know what their plan is now. Like, you know, 2 weeks from now, there'll be an interview with Matt, and he'll have talked to Nate and about, you know, what his decks were. But that's going to be 2 weeks from now, right? At that point, you know, we're going to be well into the next month. You know, we're going to be looking forward to the last force pack of the cycle. People are going to be really gearing towards Worlds, and they're going to be bringing up Gen Con, right? Where if... And with the amount of time that happens between rounds, right, 65 minutes between rounds, they can have somebody. I mean, just one person right. updating a website at, you know, either if it's in the forum, in the thread, or and I think it would be better this way, as a post on the main page with, like, the, you know, you see this on news sites where they have, like, the bold update with a time. Right. And that bold update has the new list of seeding and who won and who didn't win.
How about this, Ben? Have you ever heard of Twitter?
Oh,
like,
wow.
Why not just have a Twitter page and just boom, constant updates? Like, it's not that hard.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, Gen Con is really hard. Last year at Worlds, FFG made a really big effort. They had the live stream going for the various events, like with a featured table where there was a stream centered above the table so people could see what was being played, which was great. And I'm sure Gen Con is a much more difficult beast to try and have something like that set up. You're in a game room, you don't control, you have to have all of the setup for that to go along with it. But at the same time, you shouldn't have zero communication with all of the fans, right? You have 100 fans that are playing the game, right? That can only mean that it's representing a small sliver of the total number of people who wish they were there playing the game and who are interested about the game and who want to know what's happening in real time at these events on a large scale.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, basically, I was just bugging TGO all day. TGO, how you doing? How's Jared doing? How's Justin doing? You know, every name I could come up with. Anyone else there we know at the event? I mean, it was just really frustrating. And it would have been really fun to be able to see, like, Matt Coles. He's first after the first round of Swiss. He's second in the second. And you're looking at these names that you don't know yet. And you're like, who is this guy? He's dominating. And then by the time you get to Swiss, you're like, you know, okay, Swiss has ended. And there's these two guys at the top that have been there the whole time that I've never heard of. These guys must be amazing. I want to know more about them. And then you sort of see them progress through the top 16. Instead, at the end of the day, you're just like, and the winner is, who knows? Let's wait until that winner says on some board, hey, I won.
Like, right, I mean, that was the thing, right?
Tell you who won.
I checked on Saturday morning West Coast time. Just kind of like kept hitting refresh. It was probably like, I, you know, I can tell you exactly when I found out about it, because as soon as I read it, I immediately posted to the Smuggler's Den on Facebook, and that'll have a time for us. So go. I found out about it at exactly, doesn't have the information. It doesn't have that information.
And it doesn't have it. Thanks, Ben.
Oh, I was so confident. Hold on. There's going to be a response. August 16th at 8:30 a.m. West Coast time.
That's when you found out.
That's when I found out.
I don't even remember when I found out. I think I found out when it happened.
I think I called you.
I think I already knew. I think TGO told me that night. But I don't remember. But basically, it was not FFG stepping up and even telling you who won the event. FFG still has not told us who won the event.
That's true.
It's just a weird thing. But for me, it's just FFG. Like, that's, I would expect nothing less from FFG.
And nothing more.
And organized play. It's just how they do things. It really, I mean, in one way, it really galvanizes the community. You know, it is all on us as a community to come together and provide all this information, but at the same time, it feels really weird at times.
Sure. Well, that's it for our Gen Con coverage. I'm sure as more things come to light, even next episode, we'll still be griping about various things that have happened. And also, I mean, at the end of the day, anything that we're saying as a complaint should always be taken with, like, this is just the negative stuff that we see. And we give it a little bit of airtime, and by a little bit of airtime, I mean far too long of airtime. At the end of the day, we still, you know, the game is amazing. FFG, you know, does a great job 75% of the time. And we're just, and the bemoaning doesn't come from like, hang FFG, we don't want this anymore. It's more like we just want to keep encouraging FFG to be the next level tier game company, I guess would be the way to say it.
Yeah. And they are improving.
And they're improving. And they're a ton better than they were, and they're only getting better. And it's just that we every time we see something, it's like, all right, they did this, and they've moved on, and we have this new thing. We need this next new thing, right? Because if you keep still, you're going to lose players, you're going to lose interest, and that's not what we want as people who want the game to grow. It's not what FFG wants as a company who wants to make money. And the only way you can do that is to continue to add new, fresh things every time. And right now, I think FFG just gets comfortable. Like, okay, we did this. Everybody seemed pretty happy with that. Let's do that again next year. And that's not what people want. They want the next level of escalation.
Yep. All I can say is this. FFG used to give arm patches in the league kits. Now they give play mats and alternate art cards. So we're on the right path.
We're on the right track.
All right, so somewhat associated with our Gen Con talk is something that interests me, and that is how you evaluate cards. And so, Ben, when you are looking at a card, how do you evaluate its strength or its value?
I think this is pretty complicated in terms of answers. I think my immediate response would probably be, if I read a card that I like, right, and it seems like it's pretty strong, I immediately think about what it would go well with, right? So I think a good example of this would be something like General Veers, right? I read General Veers. He's got some good icons. He's got the resource. He's got, he's pretty good cost. He has that ability where he gives extra icons to troopers and walkers, and I think to myself, all right, I really like this card. I really like it. I think it's a strong card. My next step is, I've thought about what kind of like why I like it and what it would be good in. I then look at the rest of the pod and say, okay, so I like this card. What does the rest of the pod look like? Oh, look, there are two Blizzard AT-STs. Those are walkers. They synergize really well with Veers. They're also really good with their shield and their one, their cost. And then the other cards in the objective are the Turbo Laser Battery and a Battle of Hoth. And I really like Battle of Hoths as fate cards. I like to remove damage from my own. I like to do damage when I'm given the opportunity. And I like that it has three Force icons. And the Turbo Laser Battery is definitely one of those cards that can be hit or miss. But sometimes it's such a big, like just swinging card when your opponent has nine resources in enhancements and then trust your feelings and all these other things. And you play Turbo Laser Battery and blow up an objective. It's super punishing, and I really like it. And so now I've looked at Veers. I thought he was a good card. I've looked at his pod and analyzed his pod and thought the pod was pretty decent. And then I would then try and fit it into other pods and other decks that have been around or could potentially be generated in the meta to see how it would fit in. And then play the deck to see how that one card in that one pod overall supports or doesn't support the whole. And that's, it's a really long process when you're right, not trying to do things in just a bubble.
So it sounds like you are not just looking at Veers and saying whether he's good or not.
I wish I could.
Yeah.
But I do not.
For me, it's a little bit different than that. Like the first thing is I look at card abilities, and there's certain abilities and certain things that rank a card almost out of that whole system. Like if a card has targeted strike, it immediately gets bumped into a different stratosphere. Targeted strike is just so powerful in the game that it gets evaluated a little bit differently. Another thing would be tactics icons that are black. And if there are two or more black tactics icons on a unit, it gets evaluated differently.
Oh, you mean like the Anzadi Elite?
Yes, that does get evaluated differently. But cost and health are part of it as well. So it originally gets bumped into that upper level, and then you look at it and you go, health 1 is dangerous. But still, it doesn't get bumped out of that. It's still one of the top cards in the game until you look at what I think is the underrated aspect of evaluating cards, and that is, what does the meta look like? And I think this is a really difficult aspect of evaluating cards. But if the meta did not have Let the Wookiee Win or Lightsaber Deflection or Han, I think Anzadi Elite would be a phenomenal card. But the problem is the meta is littered with ways to easily do one damage to a unit. And that's where a card like Anzadi Elite just gets crushed and gets moved from one of the very best cards being evaluated on a raw level to, in my opinion, completely unplayable card.
So you're saying a lot of your decision on how good a card is comes from what the other cards in the game are.
Exactly. What the other cards in the game are. And not only that, but they have to be played. So for instance, if some card in a pod that no one ever plays because it's a terrible pod crushes a particular great card, I'm still going to play that card because no one's playing that pod. Like if, for instance, Han was in a pod of just four garbage cards and everyone looked at it and went, oh my goodness, I wish I could play Han. I just can't. I just can't play Han. Stuff like Trooper decks would suddenly become way better, and cards like Trooper Assault, which looks on paper to be a phenomenal card, would move way up my list, whereas right now Trooper Assault is near the bottom just because Trooper decks are really difficult to pull off with Han in the meta.
Do you think that would be solved in the future as more Troopers come out, completely off topic here, more Troopers come out that aren't one health?
Yes, I already think there's probably a Trooper deck that's viable. I've been thinking it. I tried it. Did really well one game. Second game, my opponent got Han first turn, and it was just that reawakening of, oh, yeah, Han beats Trooper decks. Okay, cool. But, yes, I think...
You think the new Troopers that come out in Battle of Hoth are going to be a big boon for it? Vader's Fist, you have the 501st Legion, which is a 4-4. And then a bunch of guys that are 2/2s.
Yeah, I think that could potentially help. The problem is you only get three troopers, which isn't that bad.
You can run two of the objective.
Yeah, you can run two of it. So yeah, I mean, that could help. And then with Mahdi and the stormtroopers, instead of having all these one health troopers, if you have a table full of two health troopers, the problem is that deck is still reliant on somebody like Veers, and Veers still dies easily to Han and Luke. So it's not just Han's ping, it's targeted strike really hurts these kind of decks. And having two cards being really prevalent in the meta with targeted strike makes Trooper decks more difficult. But having said that, I do think there's going to be a really viable Trooper deck that's going to be coming into the meta soon.
I wonder, because Vader's Fist is a Sith card, I wonder if running it with Palpatine, but not running it for Palpatine, so running it for the Protectors, mm-hmm. is like the goal there. It's like, oh, darn, I have Palpatine in my hand with six resources. I'm going to chuck this. I really want to get out my Royal Bodyguards and my General Veers, and now I'm set. Now I can do this.
Right. And that, to me, would be the game changer for the Trooper deck. If they came out with a pod very similar to the Guardian pod, where it was one pod with two protectors in it. So you could just play two pods and get four protectors and pretty much always be guaranteed to have one on the table, I think Trooper decks would go way up in power. And maybe they've tested that and decided that they would go too much up in power, that they can't do that.
I can imagine, just have the trait Protect Trooper. Right, oh. So that it doesn't protect.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that hurts Mahdi. Or Protect Officer, so that it only hits, like, all you can do is protect Veers and Mahdi or something like that.
I kind of like that, actually.
You get more specific. I think, Protect Character is too strong.
Right.
Protect Trooper might be too strong.
Yep.
Protect Officer, there's a soft spot right there. And if it was a Trooper.
Yeah. Yeah,
there you go, Tiny. You have an objective in your mind right now forming for if you do potentially win Worlds, you can make a viable Trooper pod.
That is your pod. I already have a pod that I've already designed a pod. I doubt it would be the pod I would use, but I already have one in mind.
I've heard about this pod. That pod is kind of a little off the wall.
Yep, fits perfectly with me. A little off the wall.
I mean, I think it's we had the discussion to not belabor the point, but Tiny designed the pod that he then looked at after he was done with it and was like, I don't think I would run this pod.
Yep, bit of a problem. It'd be more of a really fun pod rather than an ultra-efficient pod. And just, it's funny. The way I am when I'm a designer is more of like, let's design cool stuff. And then as a player, it's more, well, I want to win every game, so it has to be ultra-efficient.
So let's not use the cool stuff I designed.
Yep. I would design all this amazing stuff and then be like, well, no, I'm obviously not playing that.
I think it's really funny. I mean, yeah, go ahead.
So essentially, I feel like if someone said, tell me the top 10 cards in the meta, when I would give that list, it would be a list that's ever changing, essentially, that every time the meta shifts, I think that list changes. Like, for instance, Echo Caverns to me was easily top 10 card in the meta. The meta have shifted now. We see all these crazy sleuth decks. We see all these decks in which having a Palpatine with three tactics icons isn't as useful as it used to be. Even if you double tactics somebody, they drop an operative, you know, they move one around, they bamboozle. Those tactics aren't quite as useful. And so because of that, Echo Caverns itself isn't quite as useful. So it doesn't carry a mediocre pod quite as much as it used to. And so suddenly, my evaluation of Echo Caverns would go down quite a bit. Has the power level of Echo Caverns changed? Not at all. It's still a really strong card. It's just all based on the meta and what dark side decks are playing, and that changes things dramatically.
And so right now we have Matt Coles, and we're about to discuss his amazing run at Gen Con, the North American Championships, on his way to becoming the first North American champion. Let's take it away.
All right, so we want to bring Gen Con Nationals champion Matt onto the show. Matt, I can only assume you get to design three pods, is that right?
Yeah, I wish.
No, you don't get to design any pods? That's unfortunate. I was hoping the Gen Con winner would get to design a pod or something.
I joked with them afterwards that, you know, I get to be an Imperial officer or something in the next set, right? But they know that was not going to be. They notified me that was not going to be happening. So
you could be Luke. Like, they could just paint your face on Luke. That'd be cool.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess they'll hopefully there'll be like a stormtrooper in the background, and they'll at least say like, yeah, that's you under the armor.
Yeah, under the armor.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can do that. Like, we've got you know, they can put you in the background. Why not? All right, well, congratulations, man. So I just noticed that you actually already did an interview with Table Flip, so I think we're going to go in a little bit different direction. Luckily, Ben actually had the time to listen to it, so he was able to tell me sort of what you guys already covered.
Okay, great.
I do want to ask you a background question. Yep. So how big is your meta? How big is the group of people you play with? I heard that you test with a core group. But do you have a bigger group you meet with every week, or do you really just have like three guys that you've been getting together with for a few months now?
Yeah, we really just have the four of us total, and we actually don't play at a store or anything. We've gone for the regionals, but otherwise it's just the four of us playing games since last December, whenever the game came out.
Nice. And what part of the country are you in?
Near Cincinnati, Ohio.
Okay. So are you saying you haven't tried to hook up at all with the meta there, or you have and it didn't really work and you guys kind of retreated into your own little group?
No, we hadn't. We've gone to the regional, so we've kind of met the different play groups at three different local stores, and we really just didn't have the desire to spend an extra night a week going out there and testing with those guys. There's definitely some great players around there. I'm sure we could have learn something, but at the end of the day, we figured we're okay with just the three of us or four of us. We have a lot of experience playing card games in the past, so we figured we'd be able to get a handle on the best decks just with us.
Gotcha. That's a nice diplomatic answer from a champion.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations, man.
Thanks.
I was very curious about your decks. For anyone who's listened to the show, I think we had a little bit different idea of what the top decks would be going into the event than what you had going in. So I was just wondering, in your testing, did you test much against something with a Han, Chewie, Falcon, and then with either the Guardians and Luke, or with Lando and maybe a Blockade Runner or something like that?
Yeah, we did. We tested a lot. Probably the most that we tested for light side was something with Han, Chewie, Falcon, and Luke. And then the fifth pod would rotate, whether it was Protectors or Red 5 at times or something else. And we really just were finding in our testing that while the deck on paper seemed to be that it looked like it should be amazing and should be the way to go, that the winning percentage in our results was not very much higher than 500. Mm. So it was really coming out 50-50 against our better dark side decks. And then when we were testing the vehicle decks, we were having much better results. They were close to 700 win percentage against the dark side deck. So that's why we ended up going with the vehicles.
Can I just jump in here, Matt? So with something like that, I mean, I'm listening to the interview that you gave with Basio and Ketrasil, and you guys talked about having a big grid, you know, 18 decks versus 18 decks to see, you know, how it played out. When you guys looked at the numbers, right? So if you had the vehicle deck that you ended up taking, winning it at a 700 percentage, did you ever look at it and was like, okay, it wins really well against these types of decks. It doesn't do as well against these types of decks, you know, but we expect, you know, the decks that it does well against to be there. Was that type of thought process part of it? Or was it like, here are the 18 competitive dark side decks. We're going to test them all. We're going to see what the final total is. And if it's the highest, this is a deck we're going to take.
That really what you just said there was kind of step one. So we started with the raw numbers, and then we looked back and said, okay, well, yeah, it beat these dark side decks, but these dark side decks lost to nearly all of our light side decks or something like that. And then what we did is took all those decks out of it and then looked at just the numbers against the decks that we considered to be the top ones. And then we actually replayed, you know, made changes to maybe the top five or six decks and replayed that grid. And then that's, you know, that's kind of step two, I guess, of how we decided. So it wasn't it. We did take into consideration what the opponents were. And then at the end of the day, what we thought people are most likely to play and make to the top 16 with.
And then were you doing like best 2 out of 3s, 3 out of 5 against these? Like, so you would play the light side deck against the same dark side deck. Were you guys doing, and just to kind of keep it, just to kind of get a handle on this, were you then doing things like you'd start to play a game, if one of the decks started to like really pull ahead, you'd be like, all right, well, this deck won, you know, let's save some time, stop, and we'll, you know, that'll count as a win, and we'll just do another round. Was that type of what you were playing, or were you playing out full games?
No, we were. I mean, there was a lot of games to be played, so we were doing we were doing the shortcuts, like you said. So if it was clearly out of hand, or we had an idea early on that this deck is just not going to beat this other deck, we would just chalk it up as a win or loss and move on. And we really only played one game matches to start with, just because we had so many decks to get through. So at least for the first round, we just played the one game matches, so you get a feel for, all right, this is clearly good against X, Y, and Z, and this is not, or whatever. And then when we got into, you know, what I guess I'd call like week 2 or 3 of testing, when we got down to the top few decks, that's when we started to play, you know, the multiple games and go a little more in depth and see how consistent they are against the better decks.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell pretty quick that troopers lose to Han.
Yeah, right.
I tried that recently. I was like, you know what? there's a lot of buzz about trooper decks. I'm going to try one. And my opponent was like, first turn Han. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's why it doesn't work. I knew there was a reason. So that's a pretty impressive way to test. I like the scientific element of it, of really testing everything and whittling it down and going with raw numbers. A question I have for you is, do you think the existence of the sleuth deck helped you in the long run? I know I had said going in that I think if anyone could find a deck with a rebel affiliation that was opposite of the sleuth deck, that it could do really well. Because I know how I was playing is that if somebody played the sleuth deck and I was playing a Sith deck, if they played the rebel affiliation, I would chuck a good regular Sith hand in hopes of getting a hand with a lot of terrible two-cost units to stop the sleuth. And then if you drop down, you know, protectors and home one, I'm going, oh, wow, I really want Palpatine back. But now he's gone because I have this awful hand because I thought you were running a sleuth deck. Did that factor in at all into your decision to run it? And do you think it factored at all in your success with the deck throughout the day?
As far as the decision to run it, it didn't factor in that much. The thing that factored in regarding the sleuths was really in our testing. We just didn't like them as much as we like the protectors. Yeah. So that's why we didn't run them. But then as far as helping during the tournament, it's hard really to say because certainly my opponents did mulligan at times, but obviously I can't see what they had and don't know their thought process. But my guess would be that you're probably on point there for some of them. I'm sure some people were mulliganing to, you know, get their Kuati security troopers or whatever they might have in the deck, their Royal Guards. Yeah. So yeah, I'm sure that probably happened once or twice where they had no crap moment when I, as you said, drop a home one and a protector, and they're like, oh yeah, this isn't gonna help me so much.
Yeah, I think the tournament structure really favored that as well. I mean, I thought going in that if someone did that, they could do really well in the Swiss, and then they would hit those same opponents in the top 16, and those opponents would then say, well, I've already played this guy. I know this isn't a sleuth deck. I'm going to have a lot of help here. It seemed like a really weird setup that did you play many of the people you played in the Swiss in the top 16 again?
No, I don't. I didn't actually play any of them.
Yeah, that's one of the problems Ben and I were talking about the scoring system. It seems like there were a lot of people that had a really low strength of schedule that made it. Like there was a crop at the top that had a really good strength of schedule, and it seems like there were a bunch of people that sort of struggled and didn't play the good players, and then right at the end went bam 8-0 and sort of leapfrogged over the good players that lost to the other good players. And so you had this weird top 16 with like half of the field that was top players that had knocked out of the tournament the other top players, or I don't mean skill-wise, I mean points-wise at the time.
Yep.
And then sort of like this mid-group of point people were able to jump in, and it made for this odd mix. And I'm wondering, do you have any thoughts on that, on the scoring system? Were you happy with how the scoring system worked out? Did you see any problems with it?
I don't know that I see any problems that I could easily fix with it. Right. It's definitely not flawless, but I don't know that I can come up with a better solution very readily here. But obviously moving from 2 points to four for a win was huge, and I think the right decision. But then it did create the scenario that you're talking about at the end where, you know, we're at the top tables in the last round. And if it was any other CCG tournament, I would probably just intentionally draw with my opponent. Mm. But at the end of the Star Wars tournament, the scoring is so weird, and it's really hard to predict where everybody's going to fall out that you just don't want to risk getting 4 points or whatever. And then you also have, you know, if you have other guys that you know or teammates that are behind you, you want to win out and knock somebody down so that they can leap into the end. So the last two rounds, both me and John, my other teammate who was a Swiss champion, we 8-0'd both of our opponents in rounds 4 and 5, and those were guys that were probably headed, you know, for the top 16 if they get a draw in there. But we ate owe them, and then they're gone. And then, like you said, somebody that's down at table 12 or something is able to leapfrog and get in at the end.
Yeah, I had a friend who was there texting me all day, and he was kind of struggling. But we realized that even though he was struggling and he was pretty much middle of the pack, if he 8-0s in his last round, he still makes the top 16, and he would have. Instead, he got 0-8'd. So he
didn't. Yeah.
except that he didn't. He said that he lost.
It's a really weird feeling. Like when we play Game of Thrones, if you're in the middle of the pack struggling, you're not making the top 16 no matter what you do. Whereas my buddy's going, wow, if I 8-0, I get to leapfrog like 35 people and make top 16. And it's just a really hard system to get your head around.
That's for sure. Yeah, I've played a lot of card games, nothing that scores like this. So the incentive is definitely to go out there and win in the final couple rounds. And it is different than any other game I've played. And you've got all these guys running around at the end of the tournament trying to figure out what everybody's going to score. And it's like, it's too difficult to figure it out, man. Just win and get in. That's all I can say to them, you know?
Yeah, that really is the answer in Star Wars. Win and you're in, lose and who knows what is going to happen.
Right.
All right, well, I have a question for you about your Dark Side deck. And first of all, I love the fact that it's just a core deck. Like, I've been basically saying all along, well, not all along, ever since Edge of Darkness, that if you bought the core set and Edge of Darkness, you don't need the packs in between. You do if you want variety, but you could easily make a Tier 1 deck with just those two sets. So I think that's interesting. But my question for you is, I have two questions, I guess. The first one is, how does it handle the Looping Falcon? When I went into the tournament, and you can tell me how you thought about this, that it felt like Light Side had three major threats. Threat one was the Sleuth deck. Threat two is mains with massive levels of protection. And threat three would be a Looping Falcon. And it feels like it handles the Sleuth deck pretty well. You have 12 two-cost units. Did you do that calculation going in?
No, we really felt like you don't have to build against the Sleuth. You just have to play well against
gotcha.
It.
Right.
And we didn't, you know, add or remove any pods just specifically for Sleuth. After we played against it a few times, we felt like the deck already handles it if you play against it correctly. We felt fine against Sleuth, and then as far as character protection, I feel like Sith is really already good enough against character. We didn't have to change much. And then when you have Force Choke and Defense Protocol, you're putting enough damage out there.
Let me comment on that. I've found that matchup is dicey. Like, it depends. If they get Wookiee Life Debt, Questionable Contacts, a couple of Wookiees and a couple of Jedi Guardians, I don't think you can chew through that.
Yeah, but if you think about what they got out there, they're not really hitting you for a lot of damage that quick either.
Right, but that would be like turn one or two, and then if turn three they go Chewie, turn four Luke, those are the games where I've really struggled. Now, I'm not saying that happens every game, but in my testing I found that I too like Sith, but there were those games where that happened. I just kind of look at the board and go, oh, wow. You know, direct damage is not the answer in this particular game. Did you have any games like that where you ran into sort of the heavy max protection and then you struggled a little bit? Or did you not have a problem even with that?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, was fine, but did have the one loss. My Dark Side, I think, was 8-1 on the day, and my one loss was against a deck that you're talking about there. So, yeah, it can struggle, but in our testing we found that every Dark Side deck basically struggles against that, other than maybe a Navy Rush deck, and even then it's still a toss-up, so that the Sith still seems the way to go. And then the TIE Attack Squadron, when you get the targeting strike working, you can knock out some units and do some damage there as well.
Yeah, Han cries when that comes up.
Yeah, exactly. So real quick, I guess, to answer your loop back to the Falcon question, that one is one that scared us in testing, but we really felt like we were fine enough with Heat of Battle and the TIE Attack Squadron and the Force Chokes when you have Vader out. So really what we were finding is the key is just when the Falcon attacks, be able to get three damage on it so that they have to abort before they can deal the damage. Because if they're coming in and hitting you at your objective with the Falcon and then dropping a Han or Luke, you know, it's really going to tear you up. But if you can force them to pay five for the Falcon and then have to abort midway through because you heat a battle them and you have a stormtrooper or a royal guard or whatever it is, then they start to get in trouble.
Okay. Yeah, that seems what I had found in testing to be the case as well. I put in my deck Cruel Interrogation sort of right at the end as my anti-Falcon tech, thinking that between Interrogate and two Interrogation droids, that would have some sort of more direct impact on the Falcon. Did you consider at all switching out Recon Mission for one copy of Cruel Interrogations?
Yeah, we had tested a version like that earlier on, and really the Recon Mission was just too good with the TIE-TAC Squadron. Getting those extra three fate cards just seemed to be necessary to make your squadrons hit consistently.
Right.
I get what you're saying, because the interrogation is great, and then once they play a Falcon, if you drop a interrogator droid on it, you've got a good shot to, after they bounce it, to at least get it out of their hand so they can't repeat, you know, every turn, play a Falcon, bounce it.
Yeah, exactly. And if what I usually do is just hold them. You know, just hold them in my hand until I see a Falcon, then drop it. And if, let's say, they have three cards in hand, they've been very careful. You don't pull the Falcon. Well, now they only have one card for the edge battle unless they're willing to dump the Falcon in. So you pretty much roll in unopposed on all the edge battles.
Yep.
So listening to the interview that you gave to Table Flip, you were talking up, so you essentially gave a quick rundown of your opponents and the challenges that your deck faced up through about round three, at which point you said that then at that point my decks didn't lose anymore. Up until the final match. And then you said that it just seemed like your deck was drawing really well. Do you think that played a big factor in either your losses or how well you did? I mean, I'm not a superstitious person, but every time I go and I play in a competitive environment, my decks tend to hand me the worst case scenario every time. It'd be like, oh, I have my opponent plays something. It's like, I have a perfect answer for that, and actually have several redundancies to cover that. Come on, deck, let's see what you're going to give me. And it's, oh, the cards that are really susceptible to that type of setup, that's going to be very helpful. Did you find, your losses had to do with your draws, or that your wins had to do with your draws or your opponent's draws? Did you feel like, you know, there was ever a point, like maybe, you know, you don't have to go into specifics, but like, did you hit a point in the later rounds where your opponent just was like, well, I'll play my Wookiee warrior and nothing else for the next three turns? Did that ever happen? And did that help you at all? Or was it pretty consistent? Everybody seemed to be doing, you know, fairly well with their draws, and it wasn't being that big of a deal.
Yeah, I don't think it was that big of a deal. I mean, I remember one game where a guy played a advisor, or maybe a Mahdi, a Death Squadron command into an advisor to the Emperor, I believe, and then I swindled it back, so he had no units out after his first turn. That was basically the game there. Other than that, I can't really remember any times where somebody just didn't have enough units early and that it, you know, that the draw basically decided the game.
Matt, I was looking through the top 16. I'm wondering who you played in the top 16. I'm not really seeing any of the Smuggler's Protection decks in the top 16, which is kind of surprising. It's interesting that a deck that pretty much everyone in our meta is playing doesn't seem like a lot of people were playing it. Did you run into that deck any more than the one time that you saw it in Swiss and struggled against it?
No, I ran into it pretty much all day. I can't remember the exact deck list for all these guys, but I believe in all three of my first top matches, so 16, 8, and 4, They were running some version of it, and then it was, and then the finals was just a straight smuggler deck. Right. But I believe all of my other top 16 matches were some version of the Falcon, Han, Luke stuff.
Yeah, it's weird though. Like, I know TGO for some reason pulled Chewie out, which to me is madness. Like, that's the backbone of the deck. Who did you play in the top 8?
The top 8 was Justin McBride.
Yeah, who also pulled Chewie out. That's interesting.
And then who was your top? Both guys from top tier gaming, right?
Yeah, you just swept top tier gaming.
Top tier gaming. No match for you, Matt.
No, they didn't last too long.
They're coming after you. They probably have on their site your picture, and it says Worlds, and then it has a target of you.
Target, yeah. Probably. No, those guys were good guys. So I enjoyed playing them. I just had the better stuff that day.
And then who'd you play as your top 16 matchup?
That would be Tim Fournier. He was one of the Phoenix team members.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. None of those people played the Smuggler's Protection deck, which is good. I think it's very interesting that top 16 was really littered with a lot of different variants. I kind of thought that there would be more homogenous deck lists here, but it's really scattered, which I think is a testament to people really doing their own testing and trying to put a different spin on, you know, Han, Chewie, Falcon, some variant of that. All you have to do is open Edge of Darkness, and you're like, yeah, okay, these are really strong cards. And so it's interesting that a lot of people put some twist on it. I think it's very interesting, though, that none of them ran that straight Smuggler's Protection. It's weird.
Yeah, so that they're missing. I honestly can't remember the deck list, but I assume you guys have them in front of you. That's how you see they're missing Chewie. Okay. So
the top two gaming guys subbed out Chewie for Renegade Squadron.
Okay.
Which, I mean, it's a good pod. I was actually running that deck with 11 pods, and I was going 2 Chewies, and then I threw in 1 Renegade Squadron just because Echo Caverns can be so game-wrecking.
Right.
But I think you have to have Chewie. He seems to me to be pretty much the crux of the deck. That's interesting.
Yeah, that is unusual without Chewie.
But, I like the decks, man. Happy that you guys did so well, especially that both of you did so well. I think it's important that there are a number of metas in the game that are strong. I think the top tier gaming guys have proved that they have a strong meta. You guys certainly, for me, you guys exploded onto the scene. You know, you might not feel that way at all, but I hadn't heard of the Cincinnati meta really before this. And it's hard to tell coming out of regionals. You know, there's so many regionals. When there's 70 regionals, it's hard to figure out which ones are littered with the top players in the game and which ones are sort of the, you know, small ones at local shops. And you just really never know. So it's really cool to see another top meta emerging out of this tournament.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like you said, I don't really feel that we've just emerged because we've known that we have some of the top decks for a while, but. And we went to 3 regionals, you know, top 8 at all of them. John and I met in the finals at one of them. Just had a dice roll to see who would win that. But so we did do well at the regionals. But yeah, I guess mostly it's due to we just haven't had much of an online presence with the game like we have in some of the games we've played in the past and had success in. So hopefully we'll be able to spend a little more time doing that now. But yeah, it is good to meet the other groups out there too and just see how competitive the game is at this early in its life.
How competitive did you think Gen Con was? I was not entirely sure how competitive it would be, especially with such a big field. It feels like a lot of the players in the game are more casual players that are playing. Did you find that the bulk of the field was really cutthroat competitive players, or did you feel like you didn't see that more until, you know, round 4 of Swiss and going into the top 16? I know at even at an event as big as KublaCon, even in the top 8, there were some people that seemed fairly new to the game and I was a little surprised. Did you get that feeling at all at Gen Con, or was it like 100 dudes and gals that were just dialed in and ultra competitive?
No, I mean, it's an LCG, so it's going to have a mostly casual crowd to begin with, I think. And then at Gen Con, obviously it's a North American championship, so you're going to bring the more competitive guys too, but I would say it's probably a split, you know. I definitely saw a lot of guys that the way they were talking, you know, they were there to have fun. They were new to the game. But as far as my comments about being competitive, I guess I'm just referring to the number of players. When you have a first-year tournament and you're able to get 100 guys,
yeah.
And at least half of them are playing pretty competitively, I think it's pretty good, especially for an LCG, because I've played some in the past and they've struggled to get, you know, more than 20 guys for their big tournaments. So
right, yeah, playing no, Call of Cthulhu.
Yes.
Not World longer, Championships, yeah. 8 people.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
It was an amazing number of people all of the LCGs from FFG saw an increase.
Yep.
You know, Star Wars is at over 100. Thrones was over 100 for the first time in almost 10 years, I think, something like that.
Yeah, since the CCG days.
Since the CCG days, yeah.
I think Netrunner had 950.
Yeah. It was pretty close to that.
They closed out the entire gaming area. It's like, well, this is just Netrunner today. Everybody else leave.
Oh, boy. All right, Matt. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. And again, congratulations on being the North American champion. And we all look forward to taking down the champ, or trying to take down the champ and failing at the World Championships.
Yeah, congratulations, all right. Matt. Enjoy all of your Han Solo-related products that you want.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, thanks, guys. Are you guys going to make it up to Worlds?
Oh, yeah. We'll be there.
Yep. We had to make a decision, Worlds or Gen Con. And Worlds it is. I assume you're going to be at Worlds?
Yeah, I'll be there. So.
Okay, excellent. Look forward to seeing you guys, the top tier gaming crew. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely will be. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks, Matt.
Later.
Bye. Thanks for tuning in to another episode.
And thanks for Matt for coming on the show and being gracious as a national champion to do an interview with us.
And until next time.
May the force be with you.